Episode 33 of the Ace and Hammer podcast. It is April 24, 2024. Matt, good morning.
Good morning, Tom. I need some coffee. I had two cups already, but I need a pep in my step.
You don't look happy this morning.
No, well, I was supposed to get up earlier to get a workout in, and it didn't happen. So I was supposed to meet a buddy to go lift, and as I was walking out the door, he bailed on me. And so I lost all motivation to go to the gym by myself.
This is a perfect way to kick off. It's all like we're opposites. Remember, last podcast, you got tons of sleep. I got none.
Yeah.
All right. This one, we're going to kick off because you didn't get up.
Mm-mm.
But I got up. I set my alarm for 4:45. And I sat there for 5 minutes debating, do I want to do this? And then I opened my phone, and once you light up the glowing ball,
yeah,
a phone,
it's over.
So I opened it up and I looked at my schedule, and I'm like, there's no way I can fit in another work. There's no time stamp today. Yeah. I can fit in another workout.
I'm booked today too.
So I did it. I got up 4:45, got a coffee, and headed to the track. And I ended up having my best workout.
Nice.
But I had my my ear pods. It's the Aeroplex, you know, things.
Yeah, the bones.
Yeah, the ones that go on the bone. So I had them charging all night. I grab them, and you know, I get to the track. No one's there. It's like a ghost town. So I do my warm up, and the Aeroplex earphones go, it just shut off. You know, I'm like, no way. So I turned it back on, said battery low, and then shut off. I'm like, no.
It is amazing what music could do for a workout and what it cannot do for a workout, especially when you're solo.
But then I turned, you know, I was like, okay, you're here. You're not going to leave. You're going to do this. Don't even get bummed. The moon was full. I'm like, full moon. It's werewolf time. Let's go. You know, it's like, let's do this. So I ripped 5x1,000 in 2:57. I was happy. Nice. Really happy.
So, and I was going to ask you this in the last podcast. Do you typically do like faster 5K workouts and races before your marathon? I mean, you are training for this marathon, correct?
Yeah. So I like to do, like that VO2 max interval, you know, those VO2 max style intervals in that last 6 to 8 weeks. My body handles that well. But I also do the long tempo runs on the weekends. Like this weekend, I did a 10 mile, but I did it on the Alter G, which I want to get into on this podcast about cross training, or, you know, running. I don't know if you want to call it compromised or unweighted or not on full body weight, you know, ways to train that are a little outside the norm for your typical, hey, I'm going to go out and try to get 70, 90 miles a week and do all these workouts and hope to God I make it to the start line healthy, you know, using some good judgment on the training plan to figure out, you know, what's best for your own body and how you can get fit without getting hurt. You know, that's everyone's biggest fear, right? Is going through the training plan and getting hurt. So back to your question, VO2 max intervals for me, it's like that 3K, 5K, 3 minutes to 4 minute type interval. Those, you don't have to put a ton of volume in for those. And you get a big benefit from it, like a big fitness boost from being at that, you know, high oxygen intake interval, you know? So you do intervals like this morning, 4:40 to 4:45 pace for me, certainly makes 5:20 to 30 pace feel a lot easier, you know?
Yeah.
Whereas if I do everything at 5 to 5:30 pace, sure. Can I run a great marathon? Yeah, maybe, but it, you know, I like to do that, that higher. I think I've had more benefits from it from a coaching standpoint, as long as the athletes can handle it and they can actually get themselves to those zones. But also a personal standpoint, you know, when, you know, you remember when Goodrich, when we were at Eastern, I mean, when we did the fast stuff, I mean, that's when the icing was on the cake, you know, at the end.
Yeah. So, I think the fittest I ever was coming off of a really good cross country season where my mileage was obviously much higher than it is, especially for indoor. And things weren't going well at the 5K distance. And I don't know if we were just training, we weren't running some of the VO2 max stuff. We were still doing longer intervals and my mileage was a little higher. And I remember over a 3-week period, like I talked to JG and I'm like, I need to cut my mileage way back and I want to start doing workouts with the middle distance group. Like, because things weren't going well. And he's like, Hammersmith, what do you want to do? And I'm like, I think I want to start training a little shorter distance. And over a 3-week period, I started doing the middle distance workouts and I brought my mile from 426 all the way down to 411 in 3 weeks. And I ran 259 for 1200. I got really, really fit just utilizing some, you know, lowering the volume, doing a lot of the VO2 max stuff, some high end speed stuff. And yeah, you can't always just be grinding away at that, you know, at 5 minute to 5:30 pace for everything. You got to go lower.
Well, what I think happened to you without even really understanding it at the time, which you probably understand it better now, is that you were grinding at the 5 to 5:20 pace tempo work. You were doing all the strength. And so you had this base fitness and strength that carries, you know, into when you lowered your volume and then began speed. That's the essence of periodization, right? Mm-hmm. The essence of periodization is having this strength and base fitness that then you're like, I'm kind of burned out on this, or you've been doing it maybe for 12 or 16 weeks. And then you're like, you know, if you're in this competition phase where you're doing the mile or the 800 or the 3K or the 5K, and then all of a sudden you start doing faster intervals, that kind of put the icing on the cake for you. And you probably accidentally did it, right? And I mean, because you weren't doing the 10K on the track.
At the time, I was specifically training for a 5K because I could see kind of where my training was leading to the last 4 to 5 weeks of the season. And I knew I was going to get – my volume was going to come down and we were going to start running faster stuff, but it would still cater to the 5K distance. So at the point when I wasn't running well, I was like, I need to cut everything in half. And I need to – instead of doing, you know, 5K workouts, I need to be doing 800-meter workouts, which is obviously not typical for someone who's training for a 5K. But I knew at the time the path that I was going down, I was burnt out. And I was like, I feel exhausted. And as soon as I cut my mileage down from, you know, I think I was 80, 85, all the way down to 55 plus, you know, 800-meter. I was doing
That's
like – I remember I did one workout.
That's why you were fresh, dude.
I was, yeah. We did 3 by 1,000. And we came through the 800, it was like 202, 201, and then 2 flat. And I'm like, where did this come? Like, where? With like 5 minutes of rest in between each interval. Maybe it's 10 minutes of rest. But it was a hard workout. I'm like, where did this fitness come from? And then the following week, did 12 by 460 with 100-meter jog rest. I was like, what happened? And then the next week, 411 miles. I'm like, wow. That was nice.
And it's a great variety to be able to go into that phase from doing tempo runs, grinding out long distance running into a speed phase. Obviously, as long as your body can handle it, you know, a lot of people who may be listening to us, you know, are ultra marathoners or marathoners. And, you know, that is a little bit different system. But it is such a great zone to try to get to because it's really hard to run those paces. It takes a little more gut-wrenching workouts, but they're not as long, right? They're shorter.
Yeah.
And, you know, this morning invigorated me in a way that if you would have asked me 2 weeks ago, I may have said, man, I'm ready to be done. I'm ready to taper and get through this race, marathon, whatever, and just chill. But then I get up and do something like this morning, and it's like completely reinvigorating because it's not a 10 or 12 mile tempo run, you know, or even a 40 minute to 50 minute tempo run, whatever you're doing. Those are mental grinding workouts. And I think that they have they 100% have their place. You have to do them. But you also, athletes also have to get to the start line of their races with a little mental energy left in the tank. And I think if you use your example of in college, you were a little burned out and your mental energy was starting to become limited. So you were getting irritated and irritable about your training. So yeah, taking
mainly
that all,
my performance wasn't showing because I was doing all the work for a long time. I'm like, man, I'm not getting any faster this season.
Right. So taking all that down a notch and recognizing that and switching gears a little bit and doing workouts that were maybe a little bit more fun, a little bit faster. They gave you some confidence, but you still had the piece of the puzzle, which was the base and the strength. Mm-hmm. And so it's important to recognize that. And, you know, look, if you have, like, if you were my athlete, like, and you came to me and the coach has to be open to listening, saying, okay, this person is feeling this way, but I definitely don't want to get to the start line having had all my mental energy go into all my workouts. Because if I go to the start line burned out and I'm just like not even willing to push myself, that's a problem too, you know? And so that's where we maybe can lead into the cross training, you know, part of this conversation. You know, that's big in sport right now. You know, I've been listening to a couple of really high in-depth podcasts about the high-end athletic performance, you know, how they're testing people now with blood lactate and VO2, and it just keeps getting more and more complex, but with more data that we have. But then you look at like a Parker Valby, who has made the news mainly because she's broken the 5K and the 10K records on the track. But she's only running, I think I've read 30 to 40 miles a week, and then cross training for the most part in between. So for listeners, from what I've read and researched, it sounds like it's a 3 workouts, maybe 4 runs a week, 2 workouts, a long run and another run, and then everything else is cross training.
Yeah.
What do you think about that?
It's, you know, I think we, especially back in Eastern days, you know, my group of friends that I trained with, RP and James, we were called the mileage hogs. You know, we were the guys doing in the summer going into my junior year, I ran 10 straight weeks of 100+ miles, topping off at 136 for 1 week. What's that?
Did it help you?
So yes and no. I think it was like we tapered off our summer training really well. Coach JG emailed us, all right, 4 days off. Just take 4 days off. You can walk, cross train, bike, swim, just no running. And we did. And then he's like, all right, we're going to do a 2 mile time trial on Tuesday, do a 30 minute shakeout run on Monday. And at the time, my 2 mile PR was 9:52 from high school. So obviously not great. And I think my PR at the time in a mile was 4:26. And so we get on the track and there's like 10 of us doing a time trial. And he's like, all right, we're going to go 4:40, 4:40, 9:20. And I'm like, all right, I'm just going to run a 32 second 2 mile PR and basically practice. And our first mile, our first 1600 was 4:40. And I proceeded to drop on the second mile a 4:24. So I PR'd my mile at the end of a 2 mile and ran a 9:04 or 9:05. And I'm like, you know, and I had an absolutely brilliant cross-country season, ran really well. So in a sense, yes, I like to lean into the higher mileage stuff, but I think there's more than one way to skin a cat. And I think to be and that only worked for a 16 to 24 week period. If you try to do that for a 2, 3, 4 year period over your college career or high school career, or you know, you're trying to run all these marathons. I think you will ultimately be, you know, burnt out, overused, you know, mentally stressed, as you were talking about. So I do think that there is a, there's a place for a place and time for higher mileage in your training, but it cannot be a consistent theme. I think it's more important to make sure your body is well-rounded with the cross training. I think we were talking about the last podcast about my mile. In the week before, I was trying to do just a short little 200 meter interval workout, and my legs were really wonky. I just come off of directing the country mile race, and something was going on with my back and hip. I actually went to the chiro last Thursday, and he's like, dude, your left leg is like 3/4 of an inch longer than your right, because my hips were like internally rotated. And he just popped, snapped, cracked me back into place. And so it just kind of hit me like, it's so important to make sure your body is, you know, in a line. Like, it's got to be very well rounded if you're going to make this thing, especially as aging athletes. We coach a lot of age groupers. You know, it's nice to do the workouts. It's nice to hit the long runs and to hit your paces. But if you're not addressing all the small ancillary muscles, all the stabilizer muscles, all your core strength, if you're not addressing the base of your body, it will ultimately fall apart.
I think that it's the old age thinking that miles will equal results. And that's true. They do. Miles, specificity included, so running will help running, right? So the more you run, the better you're going to be, or the stronger you're going to be. But runners, we're not all built the same. We're, some of us are heavier than others. Some of us are more fragile than others. You know, I run into people who can handle 90, 100 miles a week, and I run into people who can't handle over 40, you know? Mm-hmm. And so you got to have a variety of cross training resources that you can lean on. And I think that's where a couple of the high school, elite high school runners that you're reading about now today, and the Parker Valbies of the world, didn't have a choice, right? They were getting hurt trying to run mileage. So instead of stopping and doing nothing, they leaned on their cross training and found out through probably initial trial and error that it worked. It worked because the heart and the system is still building everything that a distance run would do, just without the impact. Mm-hmm. Creating strength, endurance, and building, you know, your overall fitness from aerobic threshold to anaerobic threshold to VO2. You can increase those things on the bike. You can increase wattage and VO2 on the bike. How does that not translate to running if you are running still? It does, because the heart and the cardiovascular system, you know, doesn't know the difference between running and cycling or elliptical or arc trainer or whatever. And so I think that if an athlete has confidence in what they're doing and they're seeing results and they're consistent over time, the consistency over time is really key, because if you can go 2 to 3 to 4 years in a row injury-free doing workouts that are specific to your goal, but but there's inserted cross training in there that allows you for that consistency, instead of the extra 20 miles a week, you're doing an extra 2 or 3 hours of cross training, that could be the difference maker. And I think triathletes may see that more. Runners tend to steer away. I only will do cross training if I have to, right? And then the minute they feel good again, they go back to the mileage and then the spiral. So it's like they don't lean on it. Now, what I've done is we invested in Alter G for our older athletes, because we have a lot of athletes that want to run, and they know that they can't pound the mileage anymore. So I've been running on it. There's a PT clinic here that had one since 2015, and I used it on and off, but I've used it consistently now, you know, maybe 3 days a week. and I'll run 8 to 10 miles on it at 80 to 90% of my body weight. And I just come out feeling so much better. My heart rate's still in zone two. My legs are still pounding. They're just not pounding at the full 180, mm-hmm. 175, whatever I'm doing. They're pounding at 160 to 165, you know? And so I've noticed a huge difference just in my overall well-being and my back and my knees and everything. Doing supplemental training like that, I think at age 40, it's smart. I don't think that it's necessary to go out and pound 90 to 100 miles a week at my age. Because mm-hmm. if you look at some of the guys, you know, who did that, you know, they're in their 50s and 60s and they're getting knee replacements. And I don't know if I want to get a knee replacement someday.
I look at a guy like, you know, love him, Frank Shorter. You know, he was one of those guys that like, plyometrics, what are those? Strength training, what's that? We're just going to go out and run 125 miles a week after week after week. And yeah, you can be an Olympic champion and you know, run these fast. But I look at him now and he's having a hard time, you know, just walking around. Like he's just.
So here's a question. Would you rather have been an Olympic champion?
No, and, no, because I'm very much in line with trying to be a prolonged. I want to be able to run in my 60s, 70s, and I want to be able to hike when I'm 80. And those are my goals. I still want to perform at a higher level, and I know I'm trying to get back at it. But kind of going back to your point about like using that Alter G, your mind knows, your body doesn't know it's running. All your body, and this is like one of my spiels as a coach, your body just knows stress. It knows it wants to maintain at a static level, homeostasis. It wants to be calm. It wants to be rested. So it doesn't know it's running. It just knows stress. So if you can apply stress in a non-impactful, non-damaging way to the body will reap the benefits by getting stronger, faster, more efficient. And you don't have to do that just by running. You can do that by, you know, adding strength training. You know, obviously, as you said, runners just want to run. And when things are going well, we just keep running because things are going well. And then we forget about, man, you know, I probably should focus a day or two on some flexibility, some range of motion, some strength, some, you know, all these other things that, yes, they will help us. But when things are going well, we kind of put them on the back burner. So the body knows stress. And if you can apply it in the right way and you don't have to do it just through running, it will reap the benefits.
Yeah. In efficiency, one thing you said in there, this is a whole nother conversation, but we'll kind of maybe lead into it on the next one or two or three that we do. But let's just use a swimmer as an example, because swimming is the epitome of swimming is the epitome of having zero points of contact to really give yourself any real feedback. Like you can't give yourself personal feedback in the water when you're swimming. You have to have a coach on deck to tell you what you're doing wrong. But let's just say, you know, Tom Clifford A and Tom Clifford B are in the pool, the same VO2, same fitness. And Tom Clifford B, you know, swims more efficient than Tom Clifford A. This is an easy answer, right? But they're both the same fitness. Who's going to swim faster?
B.
Tom Clifford B, right? Because Tom Clifford B is more efficient in the water. We'll probably use less energy by swimming faster. But it kills me sometimes, because I have athletes, or I've seen athletes or heard of athletes, they want all this yardage in the pool, and they want all these workouts in the pool, but they need to really work on is their efficiency in the water. Mm-hmm. They need to spend most of their time becoming efficient. And I don't know, the first 2 years of my triathlon career, I was really frustrated. I'd come home to my swimmer wife. She'd kick my ass in the pool. And, you know, I know I'm fit. I'm doing 12, 13, 14 hours a week. And my wife gets in the pool next to me and she's warming up, beating me in the interval because she knows how to swim. But I might have a much, much higher VO2 max and much, much higher fitness level than she does. But I'm thrashing in the water. My feet are sinking. This exact example can be applied to running mechanics, cycling power around the pedal stroke. Anything you really want to do, you have to be efficient. If you know you're at your max, volume per week, or you're training the best you can with the amount of time that you can, you're doing hard workouts. How do you get faster without adding more and more and more and risking injury? You become more efficient, right? You got to become more efficient. And that's where I think, like, for me, what I've worked on in the Alter G with people and myself is I'll slow the Alter G down, or I'll unweight myself a little bit more to work on forward lean and running mechanics while I'm not huffing and puffing, you know, in an interval workout where when I'm at that high extreme level of endurance, when I'm doing hard workouts, my body's just trying to survive in that workout. I'm not like, oh my God, are my feet landing perfect, or da, 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 or does my core look good? You know, is my forward lean? No, I'm just trying to get through the interval. It's hard to like give Matt Hammersmith feedback when he's on death row 9.9 out of 10 and 1,000, you know, but I can give you personal feedback when you're able to have a conversation with me, you know? And that's where I think like slowing things down, being in control, leaving things a little bit in the tank when you're doing workouts so that you can become more efficient, and therefore you can do these faster workouts. And maybe what happened to you, back to the original conversation, was when you did transition from the high, high aerobic endurance work that you were doing to the fun 800 meter workouts, you were able to run fast 300s, you know, or fast thousands with a lot of recovery. And then your level of focus was, your ability to focus for the shortened duration of the interval time allowed you to be more efficient.
Yeah. Yeah. When you're doing 10 by 1,000, you're not thinking about your efficiency. You're
thinking, I got 60 seconds to recover, but I got to miss 9 more times.
We just lost your volume. Your volume kind of went to hell. So,
hold on.
Or your microphone went to hell. See what you can do.
I'll fix it.
Repeat what you just said.
Yeah, I was just saying, you know, like when I'm doing 10 by 1,000, I'm not thinking about my form. I'm thinking about, I got to run these in 72 seconds, 4:48, 3 minutes, and I got 9 more to go after this. That's the only thing I'm thinking about. I'm not thinking about my form. I'm not thinking about, you know, what I'm going to eat for dinner. I'm thinking about, how can I survive this stupid long 10 by K workout on an indoor track?
Yeah.
And then have to remember how many laps I'm on.
I know it, you know, and then it's a balance for people, you know, it's a balance for athletes, because they want to do multiple marathons or Ironmans or 70.3s or whatever throughout the year. And you got to have the time of the year where you do sit down and actually say, look, I'm going to spend the next 8 weeks on efficiency, slow everything down, dial everything back, you know, work on, like, I'm going to have to start swimming here soon again, because I'm doing swim, run, hanging rock. And I'm not going to get in the pool and start trying to do intervals, because my body is just I haven't swam. So I'm going to start doing drills for the first like 4 weeks, something I've never done. Why? Even though I knew it, because I got to take a different approach. Cause I know that if I get into the bad habits right away, they'll just transfer, you know, when it comes July and August, they'll just transfer to the, you know, when I go start swimming open water, I'm not going to be able to, you know, transfer that, those good mechanics to the long distance swimming. But I think that should wrap it up today. Got anything else?
Nope. Should be good.
Any tips? Random?
No, I was actually just going to reference, we have Scott Murr and Furman. They write a book called Furman First, and they kind of allude to that, like training 3 to 4 runs a week and then everything else kind of cross training. It is for age groupers, aging athletes. Like, we do need to focus on our cross training, finding different ways to skin the cat while maintaining that performance level that we all want. We're not young anymore. We can't go out there and pound the road at, you know, 65, 75, 85 miles a week. You got to find ways to get the body, which I think are more efficient, more effective ways than we used to think, you know, 10, 15, 30 years ago, when it was like, oh, just run 100 miles a week. You guys just have to read your body, pay attention, listen to the signs, and follow your coach.
What's your next event?
I'm actually going to do a fun little 1600 on the track Sunday with the kids. We got
our youth program. We'll have about 150 kids out at the track to do a time 400. And I'm going to allow some of our kids in the elite group to do a mile, and I'm going to pace them, possibly run it with them.
Great. What about your next event? Your event?
Directing, Downville Mile. It's going to be, it's 350 people. It's a 125 feet of drop. It's fast. We had a four flat miler 2 years ago. No one's broken four. We've had right around 4 to 4:04 every year.
Nice. We got White Lake Half Pro-Am May 4th. We're putting on that with setup events. We got about 350 with 30 pros or so. So Colt's racing.
Go ahead.
So no, Colt is one of our coaches. He's been training hard, and he shed some LBs to get fit for this. So I think he's ready to rock and roll. And then I might do the Elm Street 10 miler in Greensboro the week after that. Just to
get a good saw that set of events. They canceled Lake Logan in our area.
Really?
Lake Logan. Yeah. Something about the lake. I think the cost to dredge the lake or clean it up or get it prepared was not going to, it was too costly.
I don't think they own that event though. I thought, well, they may have owned part of it, but I think that was another guy who lives up there.
Greyhound events, I think.
Greyhound,
yeah.
Something like that.
But, all right, well, cool.
Yeah, thanks. Well, I heard that was a good race. Week. Yeah, we'll be back next week. Thank you, everybody.
All right, see you guys.